Welcome to Croxley Green Baptist Church Sermon Podcast.
Morning. It's nice to be back with you after my travels last few weeks. Been to Hitchin. It's not that far away. They were celebrating 350 years of being a Baptist church, which it's only 50 years after the first Baptist church was founded in Spitalfields in London. So really old church. John Bunyan helped found that church. And then last week I was in Bristol. Well, I was in Weston-super-Mare, which was shot. Well, Seaford was shot. And then I was in their Saturdays in teaching, and Sunday in two churches in Bristol, which was really good to share with them. Whatever you think of Theresa May at this moment of time, there is one thing that you might call her, and that is resolute.
Yes.
She is determined, purposeful, and unwavering, although some might say she's stubborn. I won't repeat what Ken Clark said about her in an interview. Resolute. That's a word that Luke uses of Jesus here too, in that first verse, this turning point verse in Luke's gospel. Marks a hinge, verse 51, between the first part of Luke's story of Jesus and what is going to come. Verse 51. As the time approached, Jesus resolutely set out for Jerusalem. This turning point where Jesus had been on the fringe of Jewish society in the north and around the borders of Samaria and around the Sea of Galilee, the place he grew up, the places he knows, and he sets out resolutely to go to the centre of it all, to Jerusalem. And he does that despite knowing what is going to await him there. In last week's passage that we looked at, he knew what was going to happen. He told the disciples that in Jerusalem the Son of Man must be killed. And yet he resolutely set out to Jerusalem. We've just sung a song about gazing at the cross. And yet Jesus calls us not to gaze just at the cross. He calls us to embrace it. The Son of Man must be killed. And yet, a few verses later, he says to the disciples, if anyone would come after me, they must deny themselves, take up their cross daily, and follow me. Not just gaze at the cross. Be embraced by the cross. Embrace the cross in our daily living. Jesus calls us to resolute discipleship. We are living in a season of resolutions. I mean, we think about New Year's resolutions, don't we? The turn of a new year, the changes we make in our lives. But Lent is a time of resolutions. Some of you will have resolved to give up chocolate. I know that. Some of you told me that. Some of you have resolved to give up cake. How many of you failed already? Yeah, okay. Yeah. We've tried, with Living Lent, we try to give up not buying vegetables in plastic. It's impossible. It's impossible. Resolute discipleship. But actually, Lent is more than this idea of giving things up. Lent is a season of a call to resolute discipleship. That's how Lent originated. This season of Lent leading up to Easter was a time of preparation for a life of discipleship. It developed because in the first centuries of the church, they baptized people on Easter Sunday, and Lent was a time of preparation for that moment of baptism, that declaration of resolute discipleship. There is no better declaration that you are going to follow Jesus Christ than being baptized. It's a moment when you identify with the death of Jesus. It's a moment when you say, I need to know the resurrection life of Jesus. That's what we express when we put somebody in the water and lift them out of the water. Resolute discipleship, that's what baptism represents. And if you have not been baptized, there is still time for you to say yes before Easter. Last year we opened it up and it was dry. And loads of you walked through that in a move to the Spirit. But this year we're not opening up unless we fill it with water. If you have not been baptized, there is still time for you to talk to us and we can prepare for baptism on Easter Day. You know, if you think you're too old for that, last Sunday morning I talked to a 93-year-old who last year was baptized. I've got a picture of it. Now that trumps my eldest person who's been baptized, who is 84. Now actually I have to confess, this 93-year-old baptized what I call hairdresser style. Leaning back over the pool as they poured water over your head. The 84-year-old I baptized, they gave him the option of that. He said no, he wanted the full whack. So we did. I encourage you to think about that this week. It's a mark of resolute discipleship. What does resolute discipleship look like in our lives? I think these stories here, these two incidences as Jesus sets out for Jerusalem, says something about the discipleship he wants in our lives. It involves walking Jesus' road and not one of our own making. He is so keen to get to Jerusalem that he takes the direct route, the dodgy route, to be honest. He's lived in the north part of Israel for most of his life, and Jerusalem is in the south part of Israel, and between them is this region called Samaria, where the Samaritans live, not the Jews' most favoured people. They have been enemies for 400 or 500 years, and yet he goes straight through Samaritan territory. Most Jews would have taken a long way round, the other side of the Jordan, and then come in from the east into Jerusalem. No, he goes straight through. And when he gets there, he finds opposition to his journey. I wonder if he was a bit surprised about that, because he'd given the Samaritans good press. He'd gone into Samaria before. He talked to this woman at the well. There's a story with him going to this village, and while the disciples went to get some food, he ends up at a well talking to a woman. A woman of a painful history, but she's a Samaritan, and Jews would not speak to women on their own, never mind a Samaritan woman, but he took time to speak to her. And he made the Samaritan a hero of one of his stories, the parable of the Good Samaritan. And yet when he comes to the Samaritan village, he finds opposition. They will not welcome him. They're suspicious of what he's going to do. He is going to Jerusalem to be killed, but I think they've got something else on their minds in this village. They think he's going to Jerusalem to be crowned king. And the last thing the Samaritans want is a new king in Jerusalem. The last thing the Samaritans want is the Jews to have the upper hand on them. So they turn him away and they won't accept him. That's true of discipleship. Sometimes our following Jesus is a threat to other people around us, and we will face opposition from people we know, people close to us, people far away from us. As we try to live for Jesus, our lives can be a threat to their purpose and their prosperity. They can feel threatened and they will react to us in negative ways. That's part of taking up our cross daily. But there's also opposition from within, from the people who are travelling with him. James and John, sons of thunder, well named, I think, well named. Do you want us to call down fire from heaven and destroy this village? They're slow to learn, these disciples, because Jesus already sent them out on their own to visit villages. And he has told them, if a village won't accept you, don't call down fire from heaven. Just shake the dust off your feet and move on. And yet here they are. You know, do you want us to call fire down from heaven. You see, they've not got the cross on their minds either. They've got victory on their minds. They've got Jesus being raised as the King of the Jews again to put them on top on their minds. They haven't got a clue that what Jesus is about and what discipleship is about is not about power. It's about humility and weakness and obedience and submission to God's will. And so Jesus rebukes them. You know, he doesn't rebuke the Samaritans. He just walks away. But those who are with him, those who have spent time with him, learning from him, following him, his disciples, they're the ones he rebukes. And maybe there's a message there. The greatest danger from discipleship, for discipleship, resolute discipleship, is not from without. It doesn't come from outside of ourselves, but it arises within us. Sometimes because of our misconceptions of what the road of discipleship is about. Jesus resolutely set out for Jerusalem. And on his way, he meets these three people who come to him, and they ask him questions, they make commitments to him, he asks questions of themselves. And I think those three situations touch upon our life here in Croxley Green. Maybe they've always touched on every generation's life. Because they're about seeking security of a home. They're about the care of elderly parents. And they are about the nurture of children. These things can take up much time and energy and our attention in life. And that's quite right, because these things are important. These things can be honouring to God. The first encounter he has on the road is somebody who says, I'll follow you wherever you go. And Jesus warns him, look, there's no security in this. There's no permanent home in this. Are you prepared for that? You know, I think spring is the season of birds building nests. Have you noticed that in the garden? Yeah. Spring is also the season of house conversions in Croxley Green. It's the season of people improving their houses, making their houses really nice. Because it's nice to have a nice home, isn't it? It's nice to have a secure home. And actually, one of the characteristics of Croxley Green is people feel secure in this place. People have nice houses in this place. Apart from the ones that look rather shabby. Have you noticed those? You notice the bungalow across the road? You notice one of the houses as walking from the station there. Amidst all the nice houses, long grass in the garden, paintwork fading, looks really shabby. Yeah, there's nice houses. I wonder what they mask inside. But we like nice houses. We like security. And then the second person Jesus meets says, you know, Lord, I'll come with you. Well, Jesus said, follow me. Be my disciple. And he said, yeah, I will, but can I go and bury my father first? Well, that's reasonable, isn't it? Honour your father and mother. That's one of the Ten Commandments. Can I go and bury my father first? Well, he doesn't say how old his father is. Could be waiting a long time. And it's right that people care for their parents, and increasingly all of us of all generations are being asked to and involved in caring for elderly parents, and it is demanding and difficult. We need to support people in that journey. And then thirdly, there's this last person who says, I'll follow you, but can I say goodbye to my family first? I wonder if that was a quick goodbye, you know. Oh, Jesus, I've just got to nip home, meet the wife and kids, say goodbye and off. And to Jerusalem. I I wonder if this person is saying, Jesus, I'll follow you, but can I just go back and finish raising the family first? And when I wave goodbye to them and to their own life, that's when I'll follow you. That's when I'll follow you. You know, as parents, we want to give our children the best. We want to nurture them. We want to build them up emotionally to be emotionally secure people. We want to encourage them in their gifts and talents in life. We want to provide for them materially. We want to nurture them spiritually. That's important. All these things are important parts of our lives. But I think what Jesus is saying here, watch out. Watch out. Because I want resolute discipleship. I don't want diary discipleship. I don't want diary discipleship. Do you keep a diary? Yeah? I have to keep a diary. I'll go get my diary. This is my diary. I've not yet succumbed to keeping an electronic diary. I just can't cope with that. This is my diary. It's a right mess. Scribbles all over it, little post-it notes stuck in it. This records my life in, day out, week in, week out, where I'm going, what I'm doing. And there's lots of things. You know, next weekend I'm celebrating my dad's 80th birthday. So we're going away. I won't be here again, sorry. I'm not working, I'm actually going away on holiday. I'm with my family, I'm honouring my mother and father next week. I'm honouring my dad next week. Pardon? Again, it's not a holiday. Believe me, Graham, if it was holiday, I wouldn't be so tired, honestly. But this is my life. This is my life. Children, parents, things about the house that needs to be done. This is my life. Watch out for diary discipleship. Because all the things in here call on our time and our energy, and they are important. But diary discipleship slips in Jesus alongside everything else. Slips in Jesus alongside everything else. And the danger with that is, because of our nature, if we just slip a bit of God in our lives, it's easy for God to slip out again. Because the other things seem far more important and urgent. Don't do diary discipleship. See, Jesus isn't just another entry on the page of your diary. Another appointment, like all the other appointments you have, day in, day out. Jesus is the diary. Jesus is the cover of the diary. Jesus calls us to make him the foundation of our lives. Now, I wish what Jesus said was easier. I've tried to think this week whether how do I make this more palatable? And I can't. It's not palatable to me. It's not easy what he says. It's not comfortable what he says. But he warns us. He wants resolute discipleship, not bitty discipleship. He warns us. In a few chapters' time, when he's speaking to people about the demands of their lives, the worries of their lives, he will say to them, seek first God's kingdom. And his responses to these people here says exactly that. The Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Don't expect security if you're going to be a follower of Jesus Christ, even if you have a nice house. You go and proclaim the kingdom of God, he says to the second person. And then no one who looks back is fit for the kingdom of God. Seek first the kingdom of God. You see, he's moving from the margins of Jerusalem to the center. And if you're going to follow Jesus, you have to make him the center. Like the sun is the center of the solar system, and all the planets go around the sun. Jesus has to be the center around which our lives, our diaries, the demands of life revolve. He has to be woven into all of those things. Seek first the kingdom of God. That's what Jesus demands of us, but it does come with a promise. It does come with a promise. The promise is this. In the demands of our living, seek first the kingdom of God. And these things, our daily, practical, emotional needs, will be given to you as well. That's God's promise. That's God's promise. Jesus calls us to resolute discipleship, and I'm sorry, it's uncompromising. It's uncompromising. Take up your cross daily. Don't just gaze at the cross. Be embraced by the cross. By offering your life to God and his purposes. Day in, day out. Step by step, walking with Jesus along the road. But trusting in the grace and the love of God. That he will provide for you whatever you need. The security, the help, the energy, the provisions that you need in your life. Not necessarily what you want, but what you need. That's God's promise as we follow Jesus. Resolutely. All the way to the cross.